This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
It's Thursday evening at 6 p.m. and that means, of course, time for the Business Report here on Nova 103.5. Good evening. My name's Gary Strubel. And winter has come to visit in real terms for the Namibian population. And it's an interesting time for the world markets and for the financial markets in general, as it seems crypto continues to crumble. The Fed's announced interest rate hikes, and all over the markets are in turmoil. So we'll be looking at that this evening. Robert McGregor joins us from Cirrus Capital about the latest repo rate increase. We're also talking to the GIPF about the Financial Institutions and Market Act, FIMA, much maligned at the moment. Sandra Baumeister's in our spotlight this evening from Myesha. Fascinating story. And then we also talk about the impact on your home, on your budget, on your wallet of the recent rate increases as well. And that's so with Louis Mendes from Platinum Financial Services. So lots going on in the show. Though, before we get there, it's time for the Biz News Flash Briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of Biz News.
With your Biz News, I'm David Bishop. The governor of the Bank of Namibia, Johannes Kawakab, says despite public belief, the country's economy is doing well compared to other Southern African Development Community states, explaining that if one takes into account the prices of fuel and the inflation rates, Namibia ranks as one of the best performing economies in the region. Approximately 350 of South Africa's super rich, those with wealth of $1 million US, or about 16 million rand or more, are expected to leave the country this year, according to year-to-date research by Andrew Amoli, a wealth analyst at New World Wealth. They are mainly heading to Portugal, Mauritius, the UK, Australia, the US, Switzerland, Israel, New Zealand, the UAE, Canada, and Malta. Following a May 27 pledge by the Group of Seven Industrialized Democracies to phase out support for new investment in foreign oil, gas, and coal projects by the end of this year, Niger's president has said Africa is being punished but committed to fight as Africa has fossil fuels that should be exploited. And Bill Gates, who has never been a fan of cryptocurrencies or NFTs, said at a climate conference hosted by TechCrunch that the crypto and NFT sector is based on the greater fool theory, which is the idea that investors can sometimes make money buying overvalued assets if those assets can be sold to someone else at a higher price. I'm used to asset classes like a farm where they have output or a company where they make products, Gates said. I'm David Bishop. Stay tuned for more updates.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Now that the flash briefing's out of the way, let's take a look at the rest of the show. And before we get into the big stories, this is a big story, but a short segment. At a stakeholder engagement session this week, the Namibian Revenue Agency announced that the Comas region owes the tax office 5.6 billion Namibia dollars. That's in capital tax balance. That excludes penalties and interest, which the agency's spokesperson, Stephen Ndurukazi, says they will be doing something about.
Going forward, we're really going to enhance our enforcement. The debt that we are talking about would be people who are on our system and who have failed to pay over this amount. In some instances, some of them have also failed to pay the returns. In other instances, some might submit the returns but not make the payment. Enforcement as a principal approach does not end with those that are on our system, because there would be a significant number of people who are also not on our system, but because of the kind of economic activities that they do and the income that they earn, they should actually be on the system and they are not. So enforcement is also going to expand to those. It's not just going to be limited to those that are on the system.
This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
Welcome back to the lead story here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5. And this lead story is proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. And that's exactly what we're talking about in this evening's lead story. It's not only our financial future, but our financial present. And that's with the Bank of Namibia this week announcing an increase in the repo rate by 50 basis points, 0.5%, from 4.25 to 4.75. Bank of Namibia Governor Johannes Gavakab said the decision was taken into consideration of the elevated global and domestic inflationary pressures. That, I think, is kind. It has often a lot to do with South African financial monetary policy, and we can't be out of lockstep with that. But we see interest rates rising all over in the developed economies. The American Fed announcing a 0.75% increase, which is an enormous increase given the very low interest rates experienced in the West. Our guest this evening to discuss this impact on your household, on your budget, it will have a direct impact in many ways. We're already starting to see inflation rise in food prices. The price of fuel has driven dramatically. And now the price of debt. And these are often the biggest drivers of a financial household's budget. And our guest this evening is a financial consultant from Platinum Financial Solutions, Louis Minders. Louis, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, your job is to help people figure out how to do smart things with their money.
Yeah.
Not only in how they manage today's budget, but often how that impacts the long-term and future plans. So let's just start out with the obvious question. Interest rates are going up. That will have an impact. And what does that mean for the average man in the street?
Well, just like a few years back, I mean, before the whole pre-COVID thing, rates was quite high and much higher than they still are now after this increase. But like you said, the last few years, there has been a lot of downward interest rates, and that has, how can I say, loosened the belt a bit on repayments because of all the impacts that COVID had on us and the inflation and the economy and all that. But now, since things are picking up a bit or improving a bit regarding COVID and all that, there is definitely an improvement on the GDP, on the economy. And that now all of a sudden, to sort of counter the inflationary pressures, they have to start picking up the interest rates again. But that still does not make it easy on us. As you said, everything is increasing now, the whole fuel thing regarding the Ukraine and all that. But now all of a sudden they have to start increasing these rates to almost or at least somewhere close to pre-COVID rates. And that's why they are doing it currently. But this is definitely going to have a negative impact on our repayments regarding debt, cars, household, mortgages, cash loans, personal loans, clothing loans. So all those things are going to start becoming more expensive.
Okay. So, I mean, if I hear you correctly, guys had got a bit of relief during the COVID period. And for people whose incomes didn't suffer, big setbacks, they would have had a little bit more money sloshing around.
Yeah.
But we know what happens. That gets spent on stuff.
Yeah.
And now suddenly that has real pressure on households again. So
yes.
we anticipate, and most economists are anticipating this being a trend for the next 12 to 18 months, interest rates will continue to rise. Now, the biggest debt that most households sit with, the house, the bond, which is linked to prime, car, which is sometimes fixed, but sometimes floats, and cost of personal debt, so personal loans or credit cards. This has obviously a big impact on households in that it will take less money out of circulation.
Yes.
Okay. Now, as a financial planner, under these circumstances, typically how do you advise your clients? What do they do given today's situation? How should they start planning for the future?
Well, it's difficult regarding a mortgage, because if you have a mortgage already, it's not like you're going to get out of it all of a sudden. The same with a car loan. But with your smaller things like your personal loans, your credit cards, your overdrafts, these are the type of expenses that I think you should start thinking, is it really a priority? Should you have it? Should you not have it? Are you using it for a necessity or a luxury? And then try and pay off the ones that you already have and make your available income on a monthly basis, make it a bit more flexible, if I can say it like that. Having a home loan is not the worst thing, because you're actually putting away for something that you're building an asset. A car, not so much, because a car, they say it's an asset, but it's actually just a liability. With a household, at least you're building on something that would help you in the future. But with all these unnecessary laybys and credit cards and using your monthly income to repay for stuff like TVs and luxuries, which aren't really necessary. That's, I think, where you should start prioritizing your debt, start prioritizing your budget and see what is really needed and what not.
Okay. So, I mean, first thing, don't make more debt.
Yes.
It's going to get more expensive.
Yes.
And secondly, prioritize your debt, as you say. Perhaps start with that that's most expensive, often personal loans, and those, and get those out of the way as quickly as you can.
Yeah, and also, while we're speaking about mortgages, if you're applying for a home loan now, start thinking of the fact that in the next 2-3 years, there are going to be interest rate increases. So are you comfortable with another 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 per month on your existing payment? Will that be fine? Will you be able to afford it? Because that is going to happen in the next few years. We are expecting a few more interest rate hikes. I mean, like you said, in America, they've had the biggest increase on their repo rate in 30 years time. So, I mean, that just gives you an idea of where are we going towards.
Okay, so that's great advice because it is a buyer's market at the moment in property specifically, and typically this is where bonds will sit, is in the property market. It's a good time to buy, good time to invest. Prices are generally fallen.
Yeah.
You have a little bit of spare money, but really what you're saying is figure out if you could handle another 2% on top of the current rate.
Yes, at least.
Because prices are dropped, because there are many distressed guys who 10 years ago were taking advantage of relatively high rentals and got themselves into trouble when the rates went up.
Just to give you an idea, I mean, we are at 4.75 now. I think between 2016 and 2018, we were at 7%. So we're still far off where we were pre-COVID. So as I said, expect another 2 to 3% at least for the next coming 2 to 3 years.
So in financial modeling, they call that stress testing.
Yeah.
Make sure before you make that offer that you could afford.
Yeah.
If the price of debt went up, that you could afford the debt.
Take your monthly payments and see if there's another 10K that gets added onto it. Can you afford it? Would you be fine with it? Or are you going to have to start cutting on other things that you're currently paying?
Okay. Now, higher interest rates, like most things in the financial world, are double-sided for those with debt. And unfortunately, we are a heavily indebted nation. Most people are buying assets with debt, if they are, or are living on debt. But the flip side is for those people for whom debt is not a factor, but savings is rather what they live on. Mm. This is good news. Higher interest rates mean you get a higher return on money that's invested. So let's perhaps then flip onto the positive side of monetary. If you happen to be invested, we are seeing red everywhere in the world on the equities markets. People are worryingly talking about a bubble in the US and that the Fed's now pricked the bubble. They call it the everything bubble by putting up these interest rates so much. So let's talk about investments for a second. I have just inherited some money. I haven't. I wish I had. I haven't, but I've just inherited some money. We've got some investments to make. How are you advising your clients at the moment around interest earning investments?
Well, regarding any investment, the first question I ask is, what is the time period connected to it? Is it a short-term investment? Is it a long-term? Is it for retirement? Is it an emergency fund? But having said that, for the short-term, and when I'm saying short-term, I'm talking about 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 years, bonds are still one of the best asset classes to invest into because we're still expecting good returns on bonds. Even though bonds are...
Yeah, we're talking about government bonds,
right? Government bonds, mostly government bonds. But even though interest rates and bonds have a direct correlation, when the one increases, the other one falls, and when the one falls, the other one increases. But still, having said that, because of the volatility in the market at the moment, we still expect good returns in the short term regarding bonds. So bonds are the advice we give to most of our clients wanting to invest money for the next 1, 2, 3 years. When it's a longer time period, 5 and 10 years and longer, I know equities haven't been performing very good for the last 5 to 7 years, even pre-COVID. And the beginning of this year, we started seeing an increase in equities and global markets. And then the whole Ukraine-Russia thing started. So, yeah, that caught us a bit off guard. And all of a sudden, the equity and the global market is not performing as well as we wanted it to or expected it to. But having said that, over the longer term, and I'm saying this again, 10 years and longer, equities and global markets and even your managed balanced funds are still not a bad idea to invest into. But then you have to at least leave your money there for 10 years and longer, not expect insane returns over the next few years. So that's your longer term. But over the short term, I would advise looking at bonds. Bonds is really the one we're looking at now.
So when you talk about the equities market not having performed well, we're really talking about local equities. The American markets, in many cases, have seen record runs post-COVID. By what mechanisms, and there are always markets that are outperforming other markets. That's the, I guess what we're saying is, are there routes for Namibians to access international equity markets?
Well, there's a lot of options. I know there's a few apps locally available, like Easy Equities and so on, that you can invest into on South African equities, international equities. So there are a lot of options regarding that. Locally, we basically only have the NSX that you can access directly. But yes, there are a lot of apps and investment houses and websites even that you can use to invest into equities overseas. So direct equities like your British American Tobacco is locally and international. But I mean, there are ones like your Facebook and your Yahoo and your Amazon that you can invest into with these apps. So that is to your.
And then lastly, you talk about time frame of investments. Rising interest rates mean that the money markets become more attractive.
Yeah.
Especially when they start going up by 0.5% or 1%.
So yeah.
That makes significant difference on returns.
Yeah.
Are the money markets still an attractive investment? Are you still telling guys to consider money market for short term?
Well, money markets are looking a bit more attractive than they did a year or so ago because, like you said, they are directly connected to the interest rate. But I'm still a very big fan of, you get funds like your active funds who are actively managed and get into money markets, bonds, all your conservative assets. And I still prefer those to your direct money market. But if a person is very, very conservative and doesn't want fluctuation or any form of volatility, money markets are your ones to go to. But I mean, money markets, even now after the interest rates, money markets very seldom give you more than 5%, which is almost just a bit more better that you get in your normal savings account. So for me, yes, a money market is an option, but it's a very conservative option. I'd rather go for a mixture between a money market and a bond fund, me personally.
Thank you. It remains challenging times for Namibian consumers facing all sorts of inflationary pressures and rising interest rates.
And fuel.
And fuel and the price of beer.
Yeah.
Lastly, if you guys generally have outlooks on these things, what is the most basic advice you can give a Namibian household right now?
I sound like someone that keeps on going on about the same thing. But I must say the most basic advice I give to most people that are sitting in under pressure with their finances is budget, budget, budget. Really have a look at your budget. See what is a priority. Where can you save? What's a necessity? What is a luxury? And, because a lot of people I see are fine and until they see there's pressure on their budget or on their payments, they go through their budgets and then they actually realize what they're spending on monthly expenses. And I think that's the easiest way to see where are you overspending, spending on unnecessary things. Keep your slippies for a month and see what are you actually buying with your money. And that's the quickest that you realize, well, yeah, I can save a few bucks and there I can save a few bucks. I think that is your first step. And then try and reduce your spending, like I said, on unnecessary things. Prioritize your debt. Pay off the smallest ones first because that's an additional monthly amount that you have available for the next debt and the next one and the next. Car payments and household payments are something that's not that easy or will not fall away that easily. But if you at least prioritize the smaller ones, you can start working on a process of eliminating unnecessary debt. And the last piece of advice would be is to build up a discretionary fund of, let's say, 3 times your monthly salary, somewhere on a unit trust or a savings account or a money market. That should something like COVID happen again, please not, but should something like that happen again, then you know what, there's an additional few K that you can use should you lose your work, should there be any unnecessary expenses coming your way.
Okay. Yeah. Understand your financial position first.
Yeah.
Prioritize and make sure you have a plan.
Yes.
Is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
Well, we see interest rates continuing to rise over the next year or so. So we certainly don't anticipate the pressure coming off Namibian consumers anytime soon. Louis, thank you for joining us this evening. That's
my pleasure.
Financial consultant from Platinum Financial Solutions, Louis Minders, giving us advice, giving Namibian households advice on how best to navigate the choppy financial waters that still lie ahead. That's our lead story this evening, and the lead story was proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
It's the Business Report with Gary Strubel. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
It's the spotlight here on the Business Report. You're tuned into Nova 103.5. And in the spotlight, we get to talk to interesting Namibians from all walks of life. Business people, politicians, entrepreneurs, scientists, and doctors. Our guest this evening is Sandra Baumeister, the founder of Maisa, which creates high-end leather bags, which are made predominantly from Namibian and African leathers and also locally sourced materials. Aiming for a sense of the avant-garde, these bags are exquisitely handmade and exported to Europe and the world. They represent the values of honesty and appreciation, of true value and love, and all proceeds stay within Namibia and help to further charitable projects, giving them hope, a home, and sustenance. Sandra, welcome to the Business Report.
Hi, Gary. Very nice to be here.
So that's quite lofty, and we'll get into the business side of it in a little bit. But let's perhaps just touch on, we speak to many different people, and not everyone's from Namibia. You are, I take it.
I'm actually from Germany.
Okay.
Originally, and I moved to Namibia in 2016. In 2015, we started Miesa. So I started it first in Germany, and then my children helped me to make the decision to actually come over to Namibia and live here. It's a dream which came true.
Okay. So tell us through it. Your children are here, and they said, come on out. We miss your cooking. how did you get here? What was the mechanics?
I've got friends here, very close friends, and she's actually the godmother of my third daughter. And I did visit her with an intention of doing something social in 2014, it was. And then, and we chatted and I looked for something, and however we decided to, I decided to make my own thing. So, to cut the long story short, I thought there is leather in Namibia. Let's produce bags. In the first run, I wanted to actually do something with, you know, girls, want to go into schools, looking after children, okay, feeding children, something like that. But I ended up making bags, and my kids, they supported me very much. So in the beginning, I traveled, and then they actually said, why don't you live here?
All right.
And so.
So at the risk of sounding indelicate, you're not 20 on a big adventure through the world. You've come out certainly not late in life. I obviously get to see you, the listeners don't. But you would have had a life in Germany and decided to come out to Africa and have tried to make a difference out here. Perhaps just take us through that thinking. It's a big decision to move to an entirely different continent, totally different culture, totally different economic circumstances in that country. Many Europeans moving to Africa have fears of security, and the very, very comfortable existence that often exists in Europe. So perhaps that's for me, if I can focus on that for a second, how different was that? How different has Namibia been to how you thought it would be?
You know, when you move to another country, it's not going on holiday. But I'm quite adventurous as well. So, and I always liked the African, not lifestyle, but Africa in so to speak. And then I made the decision to move, and it was actually, I can't really answer that question because I just did it. I did it, and I took all the challenges which came along. So there was a door which opened, so I went through that door, and then there was another door, so I went through that door. So I didn't really think about the challenges before. I just did it because I thought it would be wonderful after a certain while, when you know, in a certain age, you want to have a change in your life.
Yeah.
And and then I just came here where the path
okay
took me.
So let's talk about Germany for a second. Your family's all still back in Germany. What part of Germany are you from?
I'm from the south. I'm from Stuttgart. I grew up there. I was born there, grew up there, basically was there all my life. I wanted to study and didn't know what to do. I was never really a good student, but I wanted to help children.
Okay.
To be better students than I was. So I decided to become a teacher. And then I for 4 years, I did a teacher training, mostly for younger children until 12. And then I ended up teaching in the end mostly German as a second language, even though I studied sports and math. Okay. But I did basically everything, but not physics and chemistry, so yeah, I'm not very good at
that. That's weird anyway.
No, it's not really my thing. And then I taught in an international school where also my children went, so that helped a lot. And then I got my fourth daughter, and then I stopped teaching, even though I really loved it. But I looked after her, and then I got called into the family business. So that was my German life, basically. Family is still there, most of them. Most of my kids joined me, but they are old now, older, and they finished school, so most of them study. So I'm left with one permanent.
And what was the family business? What is the family business?
The family business is an automotive supplier.
Okay.
They operate worldwide. It's, my great-great-grandfather started it. As a woman, it's not always easy in that kind of.
It is a tough industry.
Yeah, it's tough. It's very tough. Yeah.
So if I can zone in on that for a second, because that's fascinating to me often with family businesses. And of course, Namibia is another economy that has lots of family-run businesses that have grown quite large. I ask this often of children who come from a long line of, you know, generations of family business. There's always this sort of natural assumption that everyone's going to work for the family business, or in many cases that the father or the mother doesn't want their children to work in the family business because, you know, it creates this kind of very small sort of world of thinking. Mm. And there's, so what was your family's approach to kids in the family business?
You know, I was a teacher, and I was a teacher by passion, a passionate teacher.
But were your folks happy that you studied teaching?
Yes, yeah. Totally. And my brother, I've got a younger brother, he studied geography first. But then later on, after I had my fourth daughter, and I thought, do I go back to teaching, or what am I doing? I actually asked my dad, what is your plan? So do I have to be prepared? And he said, no. You and your children, and you love the teaching, and then I started teaching again. And half a year later, somehow, he made the decision. He said no, he wants to give his shares towards me and my brother. So he threw me a little bit into cold water, but he said he's going to help us. He's going to accompany us for the first couple of years, which he did. So I was not completely left alone. But okay. That was his approach. So my brother and I. It's now on us to, make the right decisions.
Okay. In many cases, a blessing, but like most blessings, also comes with some challenges.
It's a big, big responsibility, which we took on. We take a responsibility about a lot of children, not children, but a lot of people worldwide. And I take that very seriously.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about Maisa in a second, but first, you've picked a song for our listeners. Tell us a little bit about which song and why.
The song is called Forever Free from Goldfish. It's a band from South Africa, of course. But Forever Free means a lot to me. So I think we should all make ourselves free from certain expectations all the time. And not that we are not caring about the others and that we are selfish, but it is important to find yourself and then with that the freedom to live a life you really want to live.
None of us are tied down. Gravity can't hold us now. We're forever floating. Our feet will never touch the ground. Take the leap, it's now or never. Come with me, just cut that tether. We will always be together. So why don't we go somewhere made of endless possibilities? We don't have to know how the story unfolds. We will be forever free. Forever free. Forever free.
walking on a wire. Feel your faith begin to shake. Suddenly remember, it never held us in.
Goldfish, one of my favorite bands as well, out of South Africa. A great song. We are talking to Sandra Baumeister, the founder of Maisa, this evening in the spotlight. You tuned into the Business Report here on Nova 103.5. So let's now talk about this business that you've gotten going here in Namibia, high-end leather bags. Leather is a big industry worldwide. What brought you to leather here in Namibia, and tell us perhaps just a little bit more about the business?
So we started the business in 2015. It was more, we wanted to go more social. My best friend, Kim Kippel, and I, we wanted to start something very social. And but then I got given 10 industrial sewing machines overseas. So I actually called her and I said, listen, we have to change our plan a little bit. And then we thought, what can we do with it? What, you know, and then I discovered there is leather in Namibia. And I thought, well, let's create something. And shoes and clothing is very difficult with sizes. So we decided we go into bags. So that's what we do now. And that is what the leather, yeah. So we started. And obviously in the beginning, it's always quite difficult to find the right design and to change the designs. But however, we pulled through and here we are and making leather bags.
Okay.
Yeah, in Namibia, in Windhoek.
So this is in the fashion industry now.
It is.
Bags.
Yes.
As we know, fashion changes and so do looks. Have you guys got a wide range? Is it difficult to keep innovating? Have you created one or two designs that are staples that work for you? Give us an idea of how you cope in the fashion industry.
We do have over 30 designs in Namibia now. It's, you know, we have that Namibian African touch a little bit, but you are able to wear it also overseas. So it's not a pure Namibian, I mean, African product.
Let's talk customers and distribution.
Yeah.
Because one of the biggest challenges for small businesses, and let's take this from an entrepreneurial perspective, is we've got an idea, we've got a product. Now we need to find customers. We need to put something down where they're going to be. How much of a challenge was it to find a distribution channel? And then who have wound up being your customers?
It's still very difficult to find the customers. They are out there. So because we don't have the name of Gucci and Prada and that. So that is very difficult. Actually, when I tried to sell it overseas, they said, oh, wow, this is an amazing product. That looks great. And when I said, yeah, it's actually produced in Namibia. First of all, they asked me, where is Namibia? And then they said, oh, it's nice in South Africa. And I said, no, it's Namibia, which is north of South Africa. And then they said, oh, that's nice. And then they moved on. So
yeah, that's cute.
You need to actually work. That also made me wanting to get out there and not having just this social entrepreneur project, which to me is a proper company, But it's not that. I really would like to show them what Namibia is able to produce. It is an high-end leather bag. It is handmade. It is hand-stitched, most of them. And it's a very good quality. It's authentic. That is very important for us. It is values we stand for. And it's just, we want to get it out there. So, and it's quite difficult to find the customers.
So who are your customers understanding. Currently?
In Namibia, it's mostly the tourists.
Okay.
In lodges. But more and more Namibians get to know us better and they see the quality and we produce proudly and then they wear it proudly. And then overseas, it's also some people from, we sold bags to Australia, some to obviously to Germany and some to America. Not a lot yet, but we're working on that.
Would those be to retailers or would they be online?
No, it's mostly retailers. In Germany, there is an online shop. Yeah, but it's difficult, you know, because our bags, as they are handmade and as they are high quality, we do compete with the products overseas, you know, and then we have to really work on a name and to find the trust of the customer that they actually see, wow, this is something else. This is not what everybody has.
And I mean, those are enormous worldwide brands. To go and pitch yourself against.
Yeah.
And marketing then becomes your critical challenge.
Is it
how you justify
yeah.
the consumer price point.
Yeah.
Leather as a product, are there sustainability issues within leather as an industry?
No.
Is there enough product and it's just always going to be there?
Well, to me, yes, yeah. It is. We mostly work with bovine leather. So we have also, you know, different prints. So we have zebra print, we have leopard print, we have stingray print. And these leathers don't always come from Namibia. So okay. that is a bit difficult, but we try and get the leather mostly out of South Africa, but we also get it from overseas, from Italy, from Portugal, which doesn't really help. It's surprising.
Exactly. Got to import it. Got to re-export
yes.
it.
That is one thing, but also the salaries here is quite high. Sure. So if I really want to make huge profits, then I must not produce here. Then I okay. must go.
So let's get into that, because that is one thing that makes your business really interesting is you want to make profits, but you want to make profits to be able to invest back in the country, which for most entrepreneurs, they're looking to make profits to either invest in their own businesses or their own lifestyles. Tell us a little bit about that part of the business. Why? What? How does that make you think differently about business when it's not just for you?
You know, we all have a bit of a responsibility in our lives, and I feel like I'm born very privileged, and which I can enjoy, and I do, but I also feel a responsibility to give back in a certain way, and I just don't want to give back like, here's a bit of food and here's that. I really would like to make a difference in the little world of other people. This is why we started this business as a social entrepreneur, which means that we want to make a positive impact in the communities, in the societies and, well, in the world in the end. So what we do with Miesa is firstly, we provide jobs with a decent salary, where people earn enough money, and you know here how it is here, so they can send their children to school, they give money to the north and to the whole family. So if you give salary to one person, you provide for another 30 or whatever. That is one part. This is very important. And the second part is we set up a trust called Especially Namibian. So with some profits of the bags, they actually go towards the trust. And there, together with Wada Di Cares, it's a German trust, We set up an orphanage where we look after 19 children at the moment in Katatura, and they need to be sent to school. And, you know, they got a home, they got food, they got rooms, and they have a proper family, so to speak. Yeah, that is one thing. And then we look after two kindergartens where we also sponsor food, or we sponsor education, we sponsor a teacher if there is a roof needed, which we just done now, clothing. So we do have a couple of projects which we then actually want to support with the bags. In the beginning, I was very naive. I thought everybody loves this idea so much and the bags. So I'm going to sell bags like I can't produce. And then I can run the orphanage with that. It doesn't really work like that.
I wanted to ask about that, because that's for many social entrepreneurs, one of the lessons they seem to learn after a little bit is that this becomes an almost lifelong commitment into this channel. It's almost impossible to withdraw from the contribution you're making into a particular community. It becomes almost immediately totally reliant on that form of funding. And especially for startup businesses or smaller businesses or venture businesses, as perhaps this might be, that also adds another layer of pressure, is that even if you hit difficult times, and I'm sure COVID provided you with many challenges, you've now created a channel that's almost impossible to get out of. Talk to me a little bit about that. It also provides motivation, right?
It is.
You have to get out of bed today because these people are kind of waiting for it. It's not, you can go back to the directors and make up excuses. But that must make it quite pressure-filled as well.
Yes, but it fulfills. Sometimes I'm very honest. I stand in front of the mirror in my bathroom and think, oh, what am I doing here? I could have it a bit more easier and a bit more cheaper, because that costs a lot of money to actually fund that in the beginning. But, you know, and then I come into the workshop and then everybody laughs. Everybody's happy. I'm very lucky with staff. I don't have a lot of turnover in staff. So they're very reliable. They come back after the holidays. And then I can see what they actually can do. So we've got one employee right from the beginning, and she couldn't do really a lot, but she was always so nice. And her stitching was wrong, and I just wanted to keep her. And I said, well, then let her just make coffee or whatever. Now, because we trusted in her and we invested in her also in training, and that she is actually the one who stitches the nicest, and she is the one who is able to make bags out of I don't know how many panels. And she's always there. She's loyal. You know, if you trust, of course you do get disappointed. But it's just worth it doing that, what I'm doing. And it gives me a purpose, you know, and I really would like to show the world now there is Namibia. There are people, they don't really have proper education. They get the education with us and they are able to make this amazing product, so that they must see that. And that they know where is Namibia.
Another challenge for entrepreneurs is often support from the ecosystem, not just customers. That's a general business problem, but support from business, from government, the various bureaucracies that exist, the labor environment, things like that. As a small business owner, share your experiences on starting up and running a small business in this environment.
I wish there would have been a bit more. So it was with the beginning, getting the donated machines in. I had to pay for that instead of, you know, it was very difficult. So I did have a lot of meetings with government, and they also said, yeah, you tick all the boxes. It's amazing. And they also wanted me to export, which we also do. But there was not a lot of help. So it's very vague and very difficult. Kalish Letwine, I did have a couple of meetings with him before I started everything, and that was actually quite helpful.
Okay.
But otherwise, my friend and I and my team, we pull through ourselves.
Okay. So let's tell our listeners, where can they go and check out the creations? Where can they see? Where can they go and shop? Where can they experience your product?
We are here in Windhoek, in Eros, in the First Court Terrace. That's a building site on the opposite at the moment. This is where is the workshop, and everybody is very welcome to come and visit us and the artisans at work. We show around. We show who is making it. This is where we are based. We're also in the craft market and in some nice lodges, which we need to get out more. But this is where you can find us here. But also on the website, and miesanamibia.com.
Okay, I will just spell that out, because it's not necessarily an easy word to hear. It's MYEISHA.com.
Namibia.com, yeah.
Okay, MyeishaNamibia.com. Yeah. If you didn't write that down, you can pop us a mail at tbr@nova.com.in,
yes,
and we'll send you the link. And they can go check out what's on the site. Are they able to shop on the site?
Absolutely, yes, for good prices.
Well, Sandra, thank you so much for joining us in the spotlight this evening.
Thanks for the time.
It's wonderful to see social entrepreneurship in action. It's very clear how passionate you are about being able to try and make a difference. And I'm sure that the kids at the kindergarten and at the orphanage really see that difference. So thank you for the contribution you make to Namibia.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the time. It was very nice to be here.
That's Sandra Baumeister from Maisa. That's a high-end leather goods, a business with a purpose, as handbags are swapped in turn for futures for children. Feel free to go check out that website. That's maisanamibia.com. This has been The Spotlight here on The Business Report on Nova 103.5.
The Business Report. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
The Biz News Wrap is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Book your test drive today at M&Z Motors. M&Z Motors is proud to introduce the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Contact M&Z Jeep and Fiat Group today for your test drive. Or visit the M&Z Jeep and Fiat Group Facebook page and check out their great offers. Jeep, go anywhere, do anything.
Welcome back to The Business Report. Time now to peek over the fence at our southern neighbors and as we often do, have a little chuckle. But to find out a little bit more about the big stories that are affecting us from South Africa, we get hold of our publishing partners, biznews.com. And joining me this afternoon is Stuart Lohman, the general manager of BizNews. Stuart, welcome back to the show.
Excellent. Good to be here, Gary. Thanks.
So it's been a wild couple of months. Every week we sort of log in and have a look at what's going on. And we're like, what? This week a little bit quieter, but there's still some pretty big things happening. And we'll perhaps start off with the thing that affects us here in Namibia the most, and that is, of course, the value of the rand. We've seen the dollar shoot up in value, and it's probably more dollar strength than rand weakness, but the rand has depreciated significantly over the last week or so after a semi-recovery. But basically, I guess the question is, there's a lot of rand volatility at the moment, which way do we see it going, and how is BizNews reporting on this?
Gary, I suppose the rand's always a tough one. As you say, it's usually, you know, America catches, you know, sneezes, South Africa catches a cold in a sense. I think it's a similar concept today where it's like the cork that bobs on the ocean, you know, and goes with where it goes in terms of the movements. The big thing is obviously the inflationary high in the U.S., which is obviously going to shift the U.S. Federal Reserve's thinking on how to deal with it. So there's a lot of eyes on the decision, which will happen this week. And that obviously puts pressure on the currency in South Africa. I see we spoke to Treasury One's Andre Saliers, and obviously it's not so much, it's the after effects of a weak rand that's the big concern for South Africans. You know, the petrol price, he talks about 1,000 rand for a small car with fuel, and that obviously hurts everyone's pocket. So that's where the concern with the rand comes. In terms of where it's going to go, it's like, you know, how long a piece of string. I wouldn't put my name on any prediction or forecast, but unfortunately, it is at a four-week low, around 16 rand. And obviously, with a high oil price for South African consumers, it's not a pretty picture. But let's see what happens in the U.S. this week and, of course, the Bank of England, which will also be making a decision with rampant inflationary pressures.
Big story that I picked up on the site written by Martin Welts is, and this is, you know, this is huge. This is the kind of thing that's bobbled under the radar and suddenly pops up. But an enormous story headlined, Glencore pleads guilty to worldwide corruption, pays $1.2 billion penalty. That is enormous money. And you've got to think that, I mean, that should be business-ending corruption. So tell us a little bit more about this enormous story.
Yeah, so Martin's the former Newsweek editor, so he does the odd piece for us, a fantastic investigative journalist, and he picks up a lot of the court documentation and so and puts it into what we see as manageable reading in a sense. You know, the lawyers can get you lost with a lot of the terms that are thrown around. But yeah, the story's been brewing for a while, Gary, with the corruption. I see, if you have a look at it, it's quite widespread. I started about 2007, 2009, I see Martin says.
Yeah.
They talk about $100 million worth of bribes to officials in countries like Brazil, Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Venezuela. And I see between 2007 and 2018. So this is obviously, they say when the US gets involved, things normally come out. And I think that's why this has sort of come to fruition, that they have been sort of seen on this corruption. But yeah, it's 1.2 billion. I think that would cripple many a normal business. But in terms of the fine, Glencore have the money to pay it. And I know you sort of referred, it should end business, but it doesn't seem to be. It's something that will have to be looked at, you know, because you wouldn't sort of see the end of Glencore on the back of this, but we would like to see the end of the Guptas. I know that's another story on a similar grounds, not as big though, with corruption. So where do you draw the line? Who takes the plunge, et cetera? And that's not, doesn't come out in the story. Martin just looks at what has happened and what has happened. So,
of course, the issue with this sort of level of corruption is always 1.2 billion fine on 100 million bribes. You've got to think there was a lot more money made, and that sometimes getting caught is worth just paying the fine. But it doesn't actually fix the problem that mining giants like Glencore that issue these enormous bribes that serve to prop up often, you know, very, very corrupt administrations really can afford it. So it's just the cost of doing business.
And I suppose if you look at where they are doing the business as well, you know, as you say, it's the emerging markets. It's probably easier to get by, but it's when the first world American sort of take a look and deal with it, you know, that they're pulling out. But I agree, if you looked at the core earnings in the first half of 2021, or $8.65 billion, you know, so it's a massive number, but it's manageable. And they've also been setting aside, $216 million in the last earnings for legal costs. So it's not sort of something that they didn't see coming, one can argue.
Yeah.
So the fine, in a sense, won't do much. And the people who were involved have probably left. You know, there have been Glencore traders that have been suspended in the past as well. So it's that classic, who do you punish? You know, because the business itself, is it rotten to the core? Who knows? You know, is it part of how they do business? Who knows? These are just questions that need to be asked. But does the business pay for individuals' behavior? Again, who knows? So there's many questions, I suppose, that we can't answer that we just need to look at.
Also an important question is, how do you get one of these bribes? I just don't seem to ever be in the queue for one of these. There was another story, and this is an ongoing story. I'm not pointing to anything specific on the site, but if you can maybe just give us an idea of what's going on. The Guptas, we've been watching the soap opera for a while. They got arrested, apparently. Are they even there? But what's the latest on that? And apparently they've got 60 days to get them here or get them to South Africa. So bit of a race on our hands as well. Give us the latest on the Guptas.
Yeah, so the business editor, Michael Apple, wrote a piece. So did we ever think we'd see the day? And I think there's that realization that we are still waiting to see the day. As you say, they have been arrested. I believe they are still behind bars. Ronald Lamola, is trying to not allow for bail. So that is in the process. He says they are working with the UAE sort of team on the extradition process. But in terms of anything new since the arrest, there's nothing new that jumps out. As you say, there's 60 days to get them here. Behind bars still, Gary, which is a nice sight, I think, for many South Africans. We have to wait and see if there is justice will be served in this particular case. But there's no real update. But I think the joy, as you saw on social media, et cetera, when it did happen, I think the reality is we still need to see, it still needs to follow through for it to really happen and for there to be a bit of justice. But yeah, we'll keep our eyes and we'll let you know if anything big happens on either way.
Crazy times. It continues to be a news-rich environment, to put it optimistically or euphemistically. Stuart Lohman, General Manager of BizNews, thank you so much. We'll let you off and scour the planet for more news to bring to the readers of biznews.com. You can go read those stories and many more. That's this week's BizNews Weekly Wrap.
The BizNews Wrap is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
In today's Market Watch, we are talking to Cirrus Capital economist Robert McGregor. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
So as expected, the Bank of Namibia increased the repo rate by another 50 basis points, copying South Africa's move last month. Now, we always hear the governor talking about maintaining the currency peg, but can you explain in practical terms why it is that we always follow South Africa's lead?
Yes, so effectively, we have an agreement with the South African Central Bank that guarantees the currency peg. Effectively, that agreement means that in the event that every single Namibian dollar, so coin or notes, any physical currency ends up in South Africa, they can exchange that for other currency, hard currency, so rands, US dollars or similar. So the main reason there is that we need to maintain the hard currency reserves, which is why the governor always refers to that. And effectively, in economics, you talk about the impossible trinity. You can have two of three options. You can have free capital movement, which we tend to have. You can have independent monetary policy or a fixed exchange rate regime. You can have two of the three, but not all three. In Namibia, we've got the free movement of capital as well as a fixed exchange rate regime with a one-to-one peg with the rand, which means effectively we can't have independent monetary policy. And for that reason, we are limited by what South Africa does to a certain extent. We can deviate to the upside. We can have higher repo than South Africa. But in effect, theoretically, we can't go lower or maintain a lower repo rate than South Africa for an extended period, because that means you can earn higher interest theoretically in South Africa. That sees capital flow out of the country. And obviously that then could bring the reserves and therefore the peg into jeopardy.
Okay. Now, one of the reasons given for increasing the rate is that inflation is increasing. How does increasing the interest rate bring inflation down?
So in economics 101, the lesson that you're taught is that effectively when debt becomes more expensive, and that's through raising the interest rates, that obviously limits the ability of people to take on debt to spend more money, which means less spending in the economy, less demand pulling inflation. So often inflation is referred to as too much money chasing too few goods. If you slow down the amount of money, obviously then it works out that part of the calculation. However, what we've actually seen quite interestingly over the last couple of years is, despite how low the interest rate has been in Namibia after those cumulative 375 basis points cut in early 2020 with the pandemic, credit extension has been incredibly weak, which is very counter to what your economics 101 theory tells you, right? Low interest rates spur demand, high interest rates reduce demand. And so what hasn't been taken into consideration is the credit risk associated with that lending. And so demand to a large extent has been weak for many households and businesses. They simply haven't had demand or haven't been able to afford demand that banks were willing to lend to. But also because of those low interest rates, the risk-adjusted return that banks were earning was also very, very low and wasn't appropriate to the risk they were taking lending into such an uncertain environment. High unemployment, people losing jobs or getting salary cuts, uncertainty around lockdowns and similar coming in. And so despite the low interest rates, that didn't actually spur credit growth. Mm. So, that is the thinking and the theory, but it doesn't always play out that way.
Because you're talking about that, and I mean, the idea of we've got this massive inflation and people are thinking, well, that means everyone's going out and just spending way too much money. But as you're saying, that's not the case. And in effect, a lot of our sort of inflation is imported. I mean, if you look at things like current food and fuel prices, so does increasing our interest rate, I mean, I know we've said we're trapped to it and we have to copy South Africa, but does increasing our interest rate actually help in this kind of situation?
So it depends on what's driving inflation. And in Namibia, I mean, the inflation we're seeing at the moment is imported. That's down to the global markets, what we're seeing in global commodity prices, food and fuel there, edible oil prices. Indonesia recently doing a ban on palm oil exports. They've subsequently restarted exports, which has seen that price come down somewhat. Concern around sunflower oils and similar from Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the impact on fuel prices. And then also the impact of the rand on those, because most of these commodities are priced in US dollar terms. And so very much what we're seeing now, the inflation is not due to domestic factors, not even in South Africa. So where we've got high local demand-related inflation, say, for instance, rent or similar, their interest rates will have more of an impact. But given that these are external factors, limiting or increasing the repo here doesn't have that much of an effect. But what we are seeing globally is a lot of that higher inflation, especially in areas like Europe and America, That is related to the strong injection for demand that they had during the pandemic with things like those government handouts, effectively the stimulus checks, as the Americans liked to call them. And that obviously increased demand rapidly at a time when supply was constrained. You again had that classical case of too much money chasing too few goods. And we're now seeing that feed through into a lot of the price increases across most of the major economies.
So you're talking about the stimulus checks and this inflation having been created elsewhere. Inflation does seem to be spiking all across the world, but interest rates also seem to be being pushed up or are going to be pushed up everywhere. How much longer do you think we're going to be stuck in this sort of rate hiking cycle and what needs to happen for things to change?
So, I mean, what we've seen is the South African Reserve Bank was actually quite proactive in its view on interest rates and inflation globally. We saw them starting to hike their central bank rate last year, December already. We've seen higher inflation prints in many other parts of the world, but they've reacted very slowly. The U.S. Federal Reserve has only just started hiking interest rates. The European Central Bank has not yet hiked interest rates. They're expecting interest rate hikes this month for the first time in years. And so effectively, interest rates are typically the main tool for combating inflation, given the demand issue we spoke about earlier. The question now is, we're largely impacted by what the rest of the world is doing. And so if we see the US and the ECB moving into an extended rate hiking cycle, that means that there will be pressure on South Africa to hike, which means there will be pressure on Namibia to hike as well. The other side of the coin, though, is that in places like the US, it's not just high inflation that's the issue now, but there's the risk or the worry of a recession coming. The impact on unemployment in the last few days alone, there have been talks about major companies laying off staff. And suddenly things are looking different there, because the Federal Reserve now doesn't just have to consider inflation, which it's reacted to quite belatedly, but it now has to think of the future impact on economic growth and unemployment. And the US Fed is basically targeting inflation and employment. It's trying to balance those two. So where there are large expectations of rate hikes going forward for quite a long time, I mean, the expectation is that the Fed will continue hiking well into next year. The markets are very fickle in these anticipations. If you look at market expectations in January, they were expecting a handful of hikes over the next year. Suddenly, they're looking at several large hikes being extended for well over a year now. And so those expectations change very rapidly based on short-term information, but central banks tend to take a longer-term view as well. So we do think that interest rates will continue to increase for a while longer, but I don't see this as a long-term move, and I think it will be a bit slower than many anticipate. So over the short term, definitely still some pressures on rate hikes. And again, if we're looking at inflation, it tends to be a lag indicator, right? We see inflation now for last month, so we might be reacting slowly. Whereas once inflation starts slowing down, you might see some pressure on at least slowing the pace of those increases. And also, if we consider that inflation is going to start coming off a higher base, right? So inflation, once it started getting high, you compare it off that level. And what happens there is that then your inflation looks like it might be slowing down as well. So going forward, yes, still some rate hikes, but not as extreme, in my view, as what the market is expecting.
Okay. I wanted to touch on the fears, especially in the US, that the Fed pushing up the interest rate could lead to a recession there. What would that then mean for a country like Namibia if the US goes into recession?
Well, I mean, we saw that in 2008, 2009, with the global financial crisis, Namibia was relatively unscathed. We lived through a very quick, short recession, and then it was back to normal. The difference was back then, the Namibian economy and the government had ample reserves, which we don't have at the moment. So we're far more exposed to any global slowdowns. The big concern is what impact this has on commodity prices, particularly the commodities we export. Not just agriculturally, but largely mining. So diamonds, demand weakens for that, prices drop. Uranium, gold, copper, similar. But on the other side, also the risk that we could see there is a risk of sentiment because of a slowdown in advanced economies. And what that basically means is that we might see money moving out of developing economies into developed economies, and with that, those exchange rates weakening, right? And as the, if the South African rand weakens, that means the price of foreign goods for us becomes more expensive, including food to some extent and fuel to a large extent.
Okay. Back to the interest rates, just for a second there, the governor of the South African Reserve Bank, he said recently that the biggest mistake that, that South Africa made in terms of monetary policy was not targeting inflation in a 2 to 4% band, rather than the 3 to 6% that they're currently targeting it at. Do you think that that sort of points to an even more aggressive rate hiking policy going forward?
Potentially, but I suspect we might start seeing inflation slow down to some extent as well, not in the very short term, but over the next couple of months. I think the South African Reserve Bank has been very prudent. The difficulty there is that inflation does tend to wash away a lot of sins, maybe not for individuals and poor people, but largely for governments who've been issuing a lot of debt. And so that's also something that we're seeing is actually playing a large role, for instance, in the US and the EU. But as far as the South African Reserve Bank's inflation target, 4 to 6% inflation in developing economies is not very high inflation. We see much higher just regionally, let alone in peer economies. So 2 to 4% is more in line with what we've seen a lot of the developed economies, okay, rather.
You touched on those somewhat positive, I suppose, but are there any positive aspects to the increase in the interest rate? I mean, does it improve things for investors? Does it make us more favorable destination for foreign funds? And how does that weigh against the sort of negatives that consumers face?
So for Namibia, not that much. For South Africa, the interest rate movements do have an impact on inflows into South Africa because it is a fairly liquid currency. It's a very well-developed financial market. And so interest rate movements there do benefit the rand, or could also have adverse effects on the rand, depending on what's going on. That's a lot more complicated. But what we see in Namibia is that's not very much the case here. The sort of movement of capital into Namibia generally is more, particularly from an investment perspective, is obviously more down to growth prospects, policy in general, investment policy in general. But what we do see is that obviously the high interest rates does make it more expensive for those people who've got existing debt. And the affordability there starts becoming more of an issue. And then for those who are looking to take on more debt. But what we expect to see is, as I explained earlier, we actually saw very low credit uptake over the last 2 years because of these low interest rates. We think that going forward, even with these high interest rates, we'll actually see credit growth start to tick up again. Because not only are we seeing some sort of growth signs within the economy, the outlook's a bit more positive in general. There's an improved sentiment in Namibia in general as well, to a large extent. But also now we're starting to see better risk-adjusted returns. There is more willingness to lend in this high interest rate environment because you're seeing a better risk-adjusted return as well.
Okay. Finally, I mean, I know you're an economist, not a personal financial advisor, but what advice, if any, can you give to consumers who are facing these spiking food and fuel prices and now also have to deal with their debt having become more expensive?
It is a very difficult situation, especially because, I mean, where we're seeing the inflation is unfortunately in a lot of basic commodities. And this obviously impacts lower income households disproportionately, more so because they don't have the ability to substitute downwards, right? Richer people can afford to stop buying fancy brands or going to expensive shops and buy cheap options. Poorer people don't have that. But from a debt affordability perspective, I think this is where one needs to be incredibly careful before one takes on any debt. Because it might be affordable while interest rates are low, but interest rates don't stay low forever, at least not in our part of the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you might be able to afford that car or something else at this stage. But the moment interest rates start increasing, that affordability becomes a concern and people really need to take a long-term view on their debt. So if you're taking out a loan for a year, two, three, 10, 20 years, you need to ensure that you can afford that over that period, not right now.
Great. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks for having me.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Nova 1035.
There's been a lot of talk about the envisaged Financial Institutions and Market Act. And to get a different take on the legislation, we're speaking today to Mr. David Nyoma, the CEO of the Government Institutions Pension Fund. Good day, Mr. Nyoma.
Good morning, David.
So as the fund official for the largest pension fund in Namibia, how has the rollout of FEMA affected your operations? Envisaged rollout, should we say?
Yes. No, FEMA, the Financial Institution and Market Act, has come a long way. There has been a review ongoing for some time to replace the 1956 Pension Fund Act and other related financial institutions act, like insurance, etc. But for pension funds, is the portion dealing with pension funds that affects GIPF and other pension funds, all other pension funds and retirement funds too. It affects the pension fund in different ways. Is to do with the manner of governance and reporting. The most impact, perhaps, is on the reporting. The reporting in two ways. It's the issue of submission of annual financial statements. Under the current act and current regime, we are required to submit within 6 months after the financial year has ended. For GIPF, that was reasonable in the sense that we are such a huge pension fund invested worldwide with funds about 147 billion all over. And this reconciliations of different foreign currencies, time zones, etc., and many fund managers, asset managers, it takes us quite some time and some doing. So that is going to give us a bit of headache to do it in less than 6 months. So, but we are trying. We have already been preparing, doing trial periods where we can prepare ourselves. The second aspect is also to do with reporting as far as the GIPF is concerned. Is the submission of actuarial results. And now FEMA requires that we submit we do it annually. It used to be the statutory valuation used to be 3 years.
Sure.
And now is to be done within within year. That is to us a little bit too tight, considering that we have so many members altogether, including the active members, and the pensioners and annuitants, we have plus minus 150,000 members. So to do an actuarial evaluation is an in-depth study. It's basically actuarial evaluation is going beyond your annual financial statements and dig deep into the fullness of the data, including liabilities. And you go pensioner by pensioner, member by member, and then you reconcile that and make out a report to see whether your financials or whether your assets are perfectly matched to meet the liabilities of these members. To do it every year is not that easy.
Mm.
So we just feel that it's a bit of a tough one. We'll see what happens. And sometimes when I see the idea is good, but it's a practicality thereof. 18 months would have been reasonable to us because already we are doing an interim valuation in every 18 months to check where we are in terms of our sustainability. Yes.
Is this something that's solved by bringing on more staff, or are there sort of AI avenues that can be explored to maybe help you get in line with FEMA?
Yes, it's a very good question. First of all, to do the actuarial evaluation annually, it definitely requires more resources. And because with each valuation, you pay the external service providers, and we prefer, and in fact, it will be best practice to have it externally done so that there is independence. But also, the actuaries are not cheap to come by. It's a very small group of professionals, highly skilled, who can do that kind of work that is accredited through their accreditation bodies.
Mm.
The issue of the resources at ourselves, obviously we have to spend more time doing compilation of reports rather than doing the other work that we're doing. So it may require us to look at resourcing ourselves even more. I like your question on robotics.
Mm-hmm.
We have to explore that. As a matter of fact, last year already, I've been looking at that quietly to see whether we can do robotics, bring in robotics to do our compilation of certain data where in order to reduce cost.
Mm.
But it's a very, I like that question very much. Yes.
Well, we've spoken quite a bit now about the reporting and how FEMA affects GIPF directly. Obviously, there was a lot of sort of outcry in the press, you know, people worried about the element of FEMA that says they're not allowed access to their funds. So what's the most pressing provision in FEMA that you think will actually affect the members of the GIPF the most?
Well, I think the most pressing one is definitely that one. The issue of the requirement on preservation.
Mm.
Preservation, as much as it is encouraged in the current provisions, that is the current act, or the old act, if I may put it like that, it now says it is compulsory.
Mm.
That compulsory is the is the issue that is on the table that is going to be problematic. The current situation, we have seen an element of flexibility. It's a mixed bag where people draw their money for various reasons. If they resign and they want to do other things and start a business or invest or solve a specific issue, like, for example, complete their own houses or dwelling, whatever it may be, that is now going to be removed. And that is a challenge. But luckily, the Honorable Minister of Finance, who is the legitimate person to do the regulations, or to bring into, or to formulate the regulation, of course, assisted by the regulator, has seen it fit to indefinitely postpone this implementation of this until all consultations have been satisfactorily done. But can one say satisfactory? There will be different opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll stand to see where it will end. Obviously, from our side, we have already started with consultation with our members. Right now, we have a survey going, which we are doing electronically through the telephones, through mobile phones. And we also have requested the representative unions relevant to the GIPF to consult their members and share with us the outcome of such consultation. This will then compile in such a way that we then formulate a response from GIPF to the regulator. We look forward to a very constructive engagement where various views are respected, and that is a way, I think that's a Namibian way where we do things democratically.
Mm. You spoke about sort of resources. I don't want to say a lack of resources, but let's say a challenge to resources and the fact that GIPF has so many members. And now you're talking about taking on those consultations yourself. I imagine that must be rather resource heavy as well. What is the timeline for the GIPF and to get these consultations done?
Well, now that the Minister of Finance has indefinitely postponed the deadline, it gives us more time for further consultation. We originally had the survey results to come in on last week, Friday. But then we sent a posting that now, because of this extension of consultation period, we are going we have asked more time to finalize this at the end of this week. We'll see the response rate, and then we take it up from there. In terms of resources, luckily we have regional offices all over the country in 12 of the 13 regions. The only region where we do not yet have an office is Hartab region. We are opening that office in I think later in the year, probably by September or October, once we have appointed a representative to be there. So we are using our offices also in all the regions to be the contact point and explain the aspect of the FEMA, and those who wish to then participate in the survey, they can then participate.
Okay. I think that that indefinite postponement has definitely helped quell the initial, well, let's call it a panic, because I think it was a bit of an initial panic. But with the postponement and with the panic having been mitigated a little bit, what message does the GIPF want to give to the members of the fund?
Well, the message is that we continue to run the pension fund, the GIPF, in the same manner with all the due care and diligence as we have run before. Whether FEMA is implemented or not, we have our own methods. We have our own policies, governance policies that ensure that we remain viable as a pension fund, we'll remain feasible as a pension fund, and we'll pay our liabilities on a monthly basis the way we have always done. Every 28th of the month, we do pay, and we don't fail on that. I'm glad to say that we have instituted even further efficiency measures to make sure that we pay on time through electronic means, and that has been really good for us. And even during the pandemic, we never failed a month to pay our members.
So there's no reason for anyone to withdraw their pension savings?
No, no, there's no need to withdraw the pension savings. And as I say, the outcome anyway of these regulations that are proposed by the government as well as by the regulator, they are meant for enhancing the efficiency and protection of the pensions and savings of the members. That's really the bottom line. This specific issue of the compulsory nature was meant, in my belief, in good faith. It was really meant that look ahead and there you gain. And I see it always once our members come at the age of 60 and we pay out the necessary dues to them, like the one third that we have been paying. Wow, you can see the joy on the faces of members. It's a risk to take your money, but at the same time, we respect the view that people should still have that choice and not to be forced.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Nyoma.
It's a pleasure indeed.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble. The Business Report, Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 103.5.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. The Bank of Namibia announced that the repo rate had been increased by 50 basis points to 4.75%, bringing the prime lending rate to 8.5%. While the latest data from the Namibia Statistics Agency shows that inflation in Namibia slowed down marginally to 5.4% in May compared to 5.6% the prior month. However, on an annual basis, prices increased by 5.4% compared to 3.8% recorded in May 2021, something Cons Karamata from the Economic Association of Namibia says is not going to change soon.
We are living in an inflationary environment. We are experiencing higher prices. Of course, the key drivers is food inflation and fuel inflation. For the rest of the year, we will experience even more price increases, especially in these two areas. Agricultural production is, of course, driven by fuel. You'll see that increase in the prices of food. My analysis is it's going to get worse. It's a global phenomenon at the moment. Namibia will be no exception.
The U.S. Federal Reserve also raised interest rates by 0.75 percentage point, the biggest rate hike since 1994. But back to Namibian news, Namibia Wildlife Resort says that about $100 million Namibian is needed to upgrade the dilapidated Zambezi Waterfront Tourism Park, which closed its doors in 2016 following allegations of maladministration. The ShopRite Group, which offers global money transfers to 100 different countries, warned of a suspected data compromise, saying that customers who did money transfers to and within Eswatini and within Namibia and Zambia may be affected. And the Teachers Union of Namibia has announced plans to have teachers in all regions down tools after salary negotiations with the government reached a deadlock. In other local news, the Cunene Regional Council has been thrown into panic mode following allegations of falsification of procurement documents and official signatures related to awarding of medical tenders in the region. The Namibian Revenue Agency announced that the Commerce region owes the tax office 5.6 billion Namibian dollars in capital tax balance, excluding penalties and interest. And arrivals at Hosea Kotoko International Airport increased to 25,453 for April 2022 from only 4,549 recorded during the same period last year, while on a monthly basis, total arrivals increased by 38%. In other news, in what may be seen as a threat to Namibia's green hydrogen ambitions, a green hydrogen project in Prieska in South Africa's Northern Cape has secured project development funding through a partnership with the Industrial Development Corporation. A study by South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases has found that over the course of the coronavirus pandemic, black people were likely to be hospitalized at a younger age, less likely to have access to intensive care units and ventilators, and had higher mortality from COVID-19 than white residents. Draft regulations from Nigeria's National Information Technology Development Agency will require online platforms like Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok to register and open offices in the country and appoint contact persons with the government in a bid to curb online abuse, including disinformation and misinformation. And the United Nations on Monday begged World Trade Ministers meeting at the WTO not to impose export restrictions on food for humanitarian purposes amid a food security crisis.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
Another packed show. Fascinating Namibians here on the show. Interesting to hear what's going on in SA as well. And tax, interest rate hikes, the international markets. It's all going to get more interesting from here. And you can track and follow all these stories right here on the Business Report. Let us know if there's something we've missed or something you'd like to hear about. That's tbr@nova.com.na. You can reach out to us on email. You can check out this episode and all of our previous episodes, 27 previous episodes now. That's on nova.com.na. Go to podcasts, click on the Business Report, and you can listen to all of our work over the last 6 months or so. As always, our thanks to our team, David Bishop for contributions, Angie Skoltz, who's our producer, Raymond Ziffelt, our technical producer, and everyone else who appeared on the show. More importantly, thank you to you for listening, and we'll catch you again next week. Have a great evening.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Struble and produced by Angie Skulls and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.